We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Ryan Weber, president of the KC Tech Council, is in for Mike Wickett, who is in his first few hours of no mom in the house, paternity leave. I'm all on my own.
Oh, dear.
His wife, Lee, who runs the point down the hall, her first day back is today. She's back in the building, so he is alone with the baby now for 2 weeks before he comes back, and then the baby goes to daycare. So we will see how that's going, but he'll be back in a couple of weeks from now, and we'll celebrate his birthday when he gets back. His birthday is this weekend, so we'll do that when he gets back. You are here, however, and we have figured out the not going to do the PC. Your world is okay now.
I got a text message asking what's up with all the PC hate. They're fine machines. I'm just super used to using my Mac, and I'm an Apple guy. I can't help it.
I'm getting Wicked new headphones. These are horrible. I don't know how he does this.
I have some noise-canceling ones for, like, airplanes.
I use little earbuds because they protect the hair.
Yeah.
This has got... Yeah. I'm having a good hair day. In spite of all the insanity that feels like the day has been, I'm having a good hair day. But this just... The top part of this that goes over the top of your head, no.
It's going to leave a mark.
This doesn't work. This doesn't work at all. I'll be running out to my car at some point today. In all seriousness, if you have particularly job-related or education-related tech questions for Ryan, it seems like every time you're here... We talk Hyperloop, but then we end up spending time answering questions. And if you've got those, he's looking at the text line. But we'll try to answer some of those on the air as well. Let's talk about Hyperloop. And so it just was an accident that you were going to be here today. We've had this on the books for a while. But there was a group that met yesterday at Black and Veatch, this panel that includes state lawmakers and engineering firms that's looking to see whether a Hyperloop route in Missouri could eventually get us between Kansas City and St. Louis in about a half hour. We'll update the meeting yesterday. You've got some new announcement for us today. But for those, I feel like we're still in the stages where we have to tell people what Hyperloop is. So for those who don't know, can you explain it really quick?
Yeah, so this could be the future of transportation in America. And it's a unique system that creates a vacuum tube where the air has been removed so that a vehicle can move extremely fast. And it really works best over long distances. So you essentially travel in a pod inside a tube, and you can travel upwards to 800, 900 miles an hour. It's way faster than a commercial jet. And the reason why commercial jets fly at 35,000 feet is the air is thinner, it's more fuel efficient, they can travel faster. Well, basically that's what we're creating at the ground level in a much more predictable way, because it's all autonomous, all electric, and it would work 24/7. So you could not only move people, but you could maybe move packages too. And so Missouri put an application in a couple of years ago now. I can't believe I've been at this for almost 2 years, to be one of the first locations. Our proposal was to connect Kansas City, Columbia, and St. Louis. And we recently, as far as last year, Black and Veatch, local global engineering firm, huge employer here in Kansas City, stepped up to do the feasibility study on this to see, number one, could we use the I-70 corridor to build this new infrastructure? Potentially, what would it cost not only to build, but to ride it every day? And then how many people travel back and forth? How much money can we save and all that? And I can tweet it out today. I'm happy to release the full version of that report to anybody that wants to see it. So it's all been cleaned up, make sure there's no intellectual property that's being distributed. So I got the final clean version. And as soon as I can get my Twitter up, I will share that out. It's just Ryan Weber, KC. And so that's what we were announcing yesterday, but as well as the CEO of Hyperloop, Virgin Hyperloop One, is going to be in Kansas City next week. And we're going to host an event from 3:30 to 5 next Wednesday. I believe that's the 24th. We're going to host at WeWork. So we'll do a little Q&A for anyone in the community to come and hear from the leader of the company.
Wow.
Yeah.
Off the air, I'll talk to you about his schedule for that day and getting him in studio while he's here.
I'm working on it. I don't have flight information yet, but yeah, we're working on it.
Uh-huh. Okay. I'm going to remind him. Like, oh, I know Ryan. Yeah. We'll get him.
I forgot about you. Don't worry.
Because it would be fast. It's always fascinating. Just like when we were talking about the single terminal plan for KCI and we had Jeffrey Stryker in studio who was leading that design process. It's always great to go to the source and say, okay, tell us more, particularly about the technology. Talk to me about price. I know we got some numbers yesterday on total cost.
Yeah, and again, we got to understand this is years down the road. And there's one big factor that will determine cost, and that is what materials we're going to use. So if you go to their YouTube site and you look at their it's called DevLoop. It's a site right outside of Vegas. And you'll see that they used a steel or aluminum tube to build their prototype. And by the way, Virgin Hyperloop One is the only company that's built a full-scale model of this technology. And it works. And they've learned a lot from that. So that is why that is the company we are working with the most. It's not Elon Musk. It's not all these other Hyperloop companies. It is Virgin Hyperloop One. They're the only ones that have done that. And they've raised significant amounts of money. And you need that because this is going to cost a lot of money. So,
it's not cheap.
So $7 to $10 billion is what we're describing now would be the total cost of something like that. And so I understand that's not cheap. It's a big investment. But if you think about where to spend money with infrastructure, I know that there are roads and bridges and everything, potholes that all need to be replaced. And the state of Missouri is focused on that. And they're going to continue to focus on
the
short-term
needs.
To
the extent that they have the money to do it and we're not passing a gas tax. Anyway, yes, continue.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people frustrated about that.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'm a Missouri resident.
Talked about it quite a bit. Yeah.
Now we got to look at the future too, because we have been visionaries with transportation since day one. And if this is the future of transportation, it has to happen in Missouri. We cannot lose that opportunity. We cannot lose our position as leaders in transportation and logistics. So it's been a fun project to advocate on, and I think over the last 2 years, one of the most important things that's just happened in the last couple of months is politicians are interested in looking at this, and they're not spending a lot of time and money on this process. They are simply saying, let's continue to move the ball, let's kick the can, and let's continue to see if this is right for Missouri. And so the Speaker of the House recently put together a blue ribbon panel, which is what met at Black and Veatch yesterday. And those are leaders from the government, from industry, from the civic community. And we've broken up into groups to answer the key questions about this, and we'll report back to the Speaker in the fall.
So we'll go to news here, but I want to ask some of the questions actually that I saw that you were kind of asking. What would make it so that Missouri invests in it? You know, will it attract new people to the region? Will it attract jobs? Is there enough demand for that Kansas City to St. Louis trek that would make it worth it? Who pays for that $7 to $9 billion? How is money made? We have many questions about it. And it also gets us into some bigger questions about, well, do we need to put the money into even fixing I-70 between Missouri, between Kansas City and St. Louis, if eventually we are just going to have Hyperloop everywhere? It's 10:33 midday with Jamie Ann Wickett on a Wednesday. Mike Wickett's out on paternity leave for the next couple of weeks. Ryan Weber, president of the KC Tech Council, is here, and we are talking Hyperloop. If you've got questions, text them into 22980. Mo's on the line with a question. I'm actually going to answer your question on the air right now, Mo, so hang on the line, or just you can listen on the air, and I'm going to ask that exact question. There was a meeting yesterday in which a panel got together at Black and Veatch, and they answered a bunch of questions, and we've got more of them, and we'll talk about that. But again, Hyperloop is what we're talking about, going between St. Louis and Kansas City in about 30 minutes, so much more quickly than you would do right now. We've got questions about regulation. We'll talk about that. But the first thing I want to talk about now is the physical structure of it. For some reason, and this just tells you, I had it in my head that it was below ground, but it's not. No. Oh, put your mic over there.
Yeah, I'm such a rookie here.
Go. Would you get on?
I remember to turn it off at the break, but then
well,
I can't remember
important.
To turn it back on. Sorry, everybody.
Turning it off is probably more important.
I have no idea what I'm doing here. Okay, so this is important because the feasibility study, which again, I'll tweet out here in a second. Sorry, guys. There was really no section along I-70 where it was determined it would make sense financially to go below ground. It's very, very expensive. So what is the most safe and the most reliable is to elevate that. So it'd be on pylons that would go either in the middle of the I-70 route or on the sides of it from point to point. It would go above intersections, overpasses. The thing about a magnetic levitation system, which is what this is, so the tube, the pod, is essentially floating inside the tube at a high rate of speed. No friction, not touching anything.
Wow, okay.
And the point of that is that you don't experience G-forces like you would if it was a train or something else. Now, certainly you would feel it, and there are thresholds that Hyperloop is comfortable with, and it would be actually less G-force than what you feel when an airplane takes off. So it's a very smooth, very quiet ride. And that elevated track is what is the most efficient way to do this, and it would... You know, let's say disaster scenario of an earthquake. Well, you want to be in that elevated track. You don't want to be at grade level. because you would feel the impacts of that much more seriously.
Talk to me then about the amount of land that you would need. So it's clear, for those who are having a hard time imagining it, if you've ever been to Chicago, they have the L train, which is quite literally an elevated train that runs over the roads.
Yeah.
There are pylons that lift that train above the roads that you would draw, the big roads, Michigan Avenue, whatever. Maybe Michigan Avenue doesn't have it, but the big roads through downtown Chicago have the elevated train. And so it literally just runs above traffic. Talk to me then about how much land you need for that with it being elevated versus if it were below ground.
The reason why the Missouri project is so interesting and really so competitive is that we've got this I-70 corridor of land that the state owns and would be potentially interested in leasing that right of way to a project like this, where those pylons would take up a small amount of space either between the road or on the sides of the road, so that you could effectively build this new infrastructure on that existing footprint. So you would not need a significant amount of eminent domain or land acquisition to do this. It makes it much more affordable. It's a new line of revenue for the state that could potentially add dollars to fix things that we need to fix on I-70. So it solves a problem. And this is, I think, important here, because a lot of infrastructure projects I see have a solution looking for a problem. This is a serious solution to the problems of I-70, which is there's not enough money to fix it. It would take a significant amount of money to add a lane and new acquisition of land, which would be something that would need to be assessed, and it would be an incredible amount of money to acquire that land. And honestly, like, why would you need to? Because this is the old way of moving across the country. So if anything, and I know I'm biased here, we should invest in the future of that versus continuing to support the past. And yeah, light me up on the text line. Go ahead for that. I'm fine with it.
No, actually,
someone's got to focus on the future.
A lot of you are asking very valid questions, and we've got plenty of time to ask those, just process questions. Let me ask a couple of these really fast that are coming in.
Yep.
And 22980 if you've got questions about the Hyperloop, because Ryan's the guy to ask. Timeline. When would you, and we should point out, very, very early in the process here.
Yeah.
But from, you know, start of construction to I can buy my first ticket, how long is that process?
So from the day we break ground and say go, and we start building this across the state, I would say you're looking at 5 to 7 years. And okay. I would say we're 1 to 2 years away from that.
And they would not start it running until it was complete from Kansas City to St. Louis?
Maybe not.
Say, would they say, hey, we've got Kansas City to Columbia done?
We'll see.
Kids going back and forth between here and Mizzou. Let's start that part.
Mayhaps.
That's a yes.
It depends.
It's not a
no. It depends if it makes sense or not. I mean, if there's a market, if it's working, if the portals are up to speed, sure, we could run that, sure.
Can it turn or curve, someone asks.
Yes. In fact, unlike trains, it's not impacted by elevation changes. So you could actually go at a pretty steep incline and not be affected by speed.
What would a ticket cost, someone just asked.
Yeah. So in the feasibility study, it was assessed that you could essentially do this for about the price of a tank of gas. But I want to be honest, it's going to be a subscription. You're going to pay it probably a service where either your employer or you subscribe to use the Hyperloop. So you could go on demand whenever you want.
Why subscription instead of just buy a ticket every time?
It's not a ticketed system where you could, but it's on demand. So if you and I want to go after the show and have lunch in St. Louis, we would just use whatever device we're using at that time.
That would never happen, by the way, no. Because of my feelings about St. Louis. But
no, sorry, St. Louisans probably not interested in the culinary scene. But
yes.
Whatever Prevel is, try to explain it to me.
Yes.
Try.
If we're like, hey, let's go have lunch somewhere else and go
if
try out the Hyperloop.
The Royals were playing the Cardinals,
okay.
And it was the 3 o'clock game. We could be there by 2:30.
But explain that to me. So what do you mean it's not a ticketed system?
The pods are there. You essentially would arrive at the portal or the station, and a pod would be prepared for you, and you just go. There's no like scheduled service.
Okay, now we've got my head. Okay, so there's no, what I'm trying to do is put it into context that people already know, and I think the problem is that we don't have any previous context for this.
No, we have to forget everything we know about current forms of transportation. Like, there's 2 trains a day to St. Louis. No, this would be, I want to go to St. Louis, I'm going to go whether there's people riding with me or not.
So I am going to, like Uber, but for Hyperloop. So I want to go to St. Louis to make the 3:10 Cardinals start, Cardinals, Royals, whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm going to schedule a Hyperloop to pick me up at whatever time I want to go.
You're going more like you're going to tell the pod where you're going. So
okay.
You're not stopping in Columbia. You're just going to St. Louis.
Do I get my own pod?
Potentially.
Are they that small? That
No. But again, like it's not like it's full of gas and it needs to be full to make money. It's okay. All electric. So it's a very efficient system. So it's not like you would need to have a full pod to go.
Okay.
Now, if others arrive at the station, the portal, we would call them, and want to go to St. Louis as well, they're hopping on with you. So it's not like you would get, you could have your own private pod. Maybe it's a business for someone to think about, where if you're looking at retrofitting your own pod, you could do that.
How many pods will there be?
As many as it can hold.
Do you have any idea what that number is?
Not a clue.
Because I'm going...
But they travel within centimeters of each other.
Well, what if 50 people want to go at 50 different times in a day and there aren't 50 pods available? You know what I mean?
There would be pods available.
Now, I know it's only 30 minutes there and back, so it would get to you pretty quickly.
And there would be probably multiple tubes, so you're going there and back. But it's not a problem. There would be plenty of pods.
Okay, back to ticket prices really fast. So you said less than a tank of gas?
Right. If we were going to charge per ride.
Okay, so I'm going to use my car as an example.
Yeah.
Chevy Cobalt, I get about 6 hours of interstate driving out of a tank.
Yeah, so let's just say 20 to 30 bucks. Let's just get it.
I'm thinking, 20 bucks kind of is what I had in mind.
Yeah,
like, for me, that's 2/3 of a tank of gas to get there.
But again, like, it's much more economical to do this in a subscription model so that you use it as much as you possibly can. And that benefits everybody, especially if your employer you have to travel between these three places, then your employer would much rather have a subscription.
What if the electricity goes out while you are traveling? What power grid is it on?
Oh, good questions.
Whose power? Now I have new questions about who's paying for the power for it. But ours or St. Louis's or whose power goes out affects us?
Well, this is going to be a great customer for every power system along the way. But it's not like you can just plug it in and it goes. So you would likely need substations along the way, which will bring new infrastructure of power to rural Missouri and probably fiber. So we'll run new lines of connectivity down this system as well. And I know there's already fiber on I-70, so don't let me up on the nation's fiber runs on road and rail. But this is new fiber. So again, this could bring new access to places in Missouri that haven't had it before.
Okay, we're getting a ton of questions now, more than I can even keep up with. We'll take a break. We're going to organize some of these. I have a lot of questions about regulation, and we'll get to that. And if we take a little more time on this, totally fine. If you've got questions about this and now you're really thinking of them, so text them into 22980. We've not talked yet about how fast it goes. Someone's asking, we already have airports in those big cities. Why not just run more planes between the two? And I have questions about demand, about who uses this.
Yeah.
Do we have an unmet... Do we have a lot of people that really want to get between here and St. Louis quickly that are not doing that because it takes too long?
We know that 51,000 people travel between those two places every day. We know that. So every day, yeah, which is much larger than I thought.
Doing what? I mean, is that? I don't mean that the way it sounds. Is that business? That's got to be business travelers, right?
It's everything. 51,000 travelers a day.
Okay.
So we know there's demand. This would not be created to replace trains or roads or planes, but it would certainly be an additional offering.
It is 10:49 midday with Jamie and Wickett on a Wednesday. We are expecting storms later today, by the way. We'll keep an eye on that. Ryan Weber, president of the KC Tech Council, is here, and you are earning your money today because we are asking all kinds of questions about the Hyperloop.
Boy, are they.
You have got questions coming in on the text line 22980. We have organized them. We'll ask them in some kind of fashion that makes sense. We've got three of you holding online. If you are on Twitter, Ryan just tweeted out, is it Ryan Weber KC? And I just retweeted it. Jamie KMBZ will retweet it from KMBZ Radio as well. But he just tweeted out the full version of the feasibility study for Hyperloop One's Missouri project. And a lot of your questions are in there, but we're going to cover some of this now. You've got questions about the physical structure of the Hyperloop, and we'll get to those. I have regulation questions. We've got property right-of-way questions that are coming in.
Whew.
But we'll get to a few of these. You're here for 4 hours. It's a good thing. I had other stuff planned, but, you know, we'll get all this covered.
That is true. We do have quite a lot of time together.
Plenty of other things going on today, but we'll get to this first. John's been hanging on the line from Riverside. And, John, I think you have a question about how the service works.
More along the lines of how it would be for paying for the service. My question, Ryan, is number one, just to understand why I ask what's going to sound like an obvious question. I have PTSD, so when I'm having an anxiety attack, things don't quite click well.
Sure.
You said this was going to be a subscription model. Is that going to be along the lines of, like, from a traditional metropolitan bus service where you pay X amount of dollars per month for a monthly bus pass?
Yeah. And
it's a really good question. Thanks, John.
And you asked two really good things there, so I want to make sure to address them both. By the way, bear with me because we're all speculating here. This has never been done. We don't know. So I'm going to tell you what I think is going to happen. I do need to be a little careful sometimes. I've signed a lot of legal paperwork, and you know what? I don't really want that to ruin my day. So if you guys don't mind, we're just gonna guess on some of this here.
But tell us again, the CEO, who's here next week?
Yes, so Jay Walter, the CEO of Virgin Hyperloop One, is coming to Kansas City next Wednesday. I believe that's the 24th. We're hosting an event at WeWork from 3:30 to 5, and you're welcome to come. Anybody in the public, just register on our website. You have to register. Please don't show up. There are limits. We can't have 1,000 people there. But he'll answer a few questions, I'm sure. So this always comes up as far as what's this going to cost, how are we going to pay. But it's my belief that it will be a subscription service, either monthly, annually, however you want to subscribe. But that way that you can use it effortlessly and not necessarily per use. But also on the anxiety or PTSD situations, they have thought about this. And their engineers are working diligently to make sure that this is for everybody, even if you're claustrophobic, because some of these things, technology can help. I wouldn't say it's going to solve these problems, but it can help where you're going to be in a fuselage, just like you would on an airplane, but there's no windows. That doesn't mean that you can't see the outside. There will be cameras along the way. There'll be an augmented reality feeling. So you will see beautiful Missouri as you travel through it. Maybe not all the beautiful billboards. Maybe we'll take those out.
Uh-huh.
Take some of those out. But you will have an experience unlike any others to make everybody feel comfortable and safe. Safety is a huge priority of this project. If there is ever an ounce of anything unsafe, this will never happen.
But again, the idea is, for those that are wondering about cost, the only way you're going to get people to do it is if it's less than it would take to drive, or the same as it would take to drive it.
It's
otherwise,
gonna be competitive.
Yeah, you would just drive it. I mean, except for the fact that it takes a lot less time, 30 minutes as opposed to 4 hours. They'll keep it competitive with what it would take for you to drive it. So,
yeah, and on the text line, somebody had a really good point about even like organ transplants. Getting that within 30 minutes, that would be incredible, right?
Yeah.
And we've got to keep in mind, this does not need people to make money. It's going to be a 24/7 system that can move people, goods, packages. It will be there to make money. It's not like something that needs to be subsidized because there's not enough traffic in a small city for a flight, right? That's not this project. It's completely different because this is built to make money. And of course, they all say that. I know. Everyone says that. But I'm serious. This is 24/7 of a service that is going to be infrastructure that just does not exist today.
They wouldn't build it if it wasn't going to make money.
Oh, yeah. And the people that invested in it aren't going to do this without getting a return on that investment. So, I mean, it's, again, not impacted by weather, pilots, fuel. It's completely autonomous, electric, and in a tube.
Speaking of the electric, I think we've got an electric question on the line. Hi, Jim in Overland Park.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My question is about the electricity that's required to run it. Will it be running on standard electricity supplied like we know it, or will it be on a European system, which is a little bit more, not a little bit, but my understanding is a lot more efficient AC-DC type electrical supply?
And I do not know the answer to that, other than I can say that it's going to be a great customer for our power companies throughout the entire state because they're going to use a lot of electricity. Now, how they use it, I don't know, and that may be proprietary.
All right, so we'll get to more of your questions here in a second. Mario, hang on the line. Can we talk about property right-of-way? With it being elevated, you need less property. But you're still talking about, 250 miles between here and St. Louis, give or take. You're still talking about needing a consistent strip of land across, 250 miles. Who owns the land that you need right now, and how are you going to get it? I say you as in you Hyperloop people. How are you going to get it?
Well, thank you, because this always comes up. And again, why this project is so competitive as being the first in North America is that we've got this I-70 corridor that the state owns the land to, and there is enough space either between the two lanes or sometimes maybe even on the side of those lanes to build this infrastructure above the highway. So the right-of-way would be leased from the state, and that would be a key differentiator in not needing to acquire or use the horrible term eminent domain to make this happen. And that is why this is such a competitive project.
Okay.
That doesn't mean there would be none. I want to be very honest about that. Because there are portals that would need to be placed near the highway, but not significantly far away. And that land would need to be acquired and not necessarily using eminent domain.
Is there room in the middle of I-70 to put it in the middle? I can't picture all of I-70, but is there enough median space right now that you could just put it in the middle?
Mostly, but it would not be that way across the entire state. Okay. In fact, there is one section where we would have to slow down if we followed I-70. So, okay. And that's because there's an Indian burial ground east of Columbia that is very important, and we would not want to alter or affect that land. And so that would be a scenario where you may need to think of an alternative.
Okay.
So we addressed all that in the study. I say Black and Beach, sorry.
All right.
I had nothing to do with that.
Mario's got another question from Kansas City. Hey, Mario.
Hello. I was wondering, is there like a much of a G-force that's going to be pushed on you while you're flying through this deal?
Yeah, there will be a slight... So G-force, again, for those of you who don't know, is basically the force that your body feels and the certain multiple that you feel against your body. It's gravity. Gravity, basically. Mm-hmm. But essentially, it would need to be less than what you would experience in an airplane, which can push a little bit over 2 G's on takeoff. So it'd be less than that. So the force that you would feel in a normal airplane on takeoff, it'd be very similar to that. It would not exceed that.
Okay. Good question, though. A lot of you have asked that question on the text line. We will spend one more segment on this only because I want to talk about regulation, which to me maybe is the most interesting.
Oh, boy.
Like, I can picture the physical part and I get the subscription service and I think that part's interesting. But the regulation is really because we don't have anything to base this on. We don't have a model because no one's done this before. And so we'll talk about who writes the regulation, who enforces the regulation, who's in on that process. We'll get to more of that coming up next. Ryan Weber, president of the KC Tech Council. Midday with Jamie and Wicket on a Wednesday. Wicket's out. 2 weeks of paternity leave. He'll be back soon. And in his place is Ryan Weber, president of the KC Tech Council. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. I remember to turn on my mic this time.
This is going to be confounding to you. By 2 o'clock, you're going to have it all.
I don't know.
All set and ready to go. And then you'll be gone, and then you're back in a couple of weeks. So, yeah, by then you'll be an old pro. A couple of things I want to mention really quickly, and then we'll talk about regulation of the Hyperloop. Kansas Governor Laura Kelly, you want to tune in for that tomorrow. She will be in studio with us at 11:30. We've got a lot of questions for her about school funding and some of the other laws that are being proposed right now. If you have questions, we will put that up on Facebook later today so that you can submit the questions you would like us to ask. So we'll do that later tomorrow. Also, Rizzi Myers is going to be in studio with us on Friday. She's living in Nashville, but she's from Kansas City, and she got onto The Voice to start with this season and then didn't make it as far as I think we all would have liked. But she's doing a big kickoff party Friday night, so she'll be in studio with us coming up on Friday. On Facebook right now is a question we're asking that we'll get into a little bit later in the show, maybe in the noon hour. And it's based on a bonehead move of mine this week that I realized. We're asking you, I don't have a better term for it, but what have you paid in stupid tax? And it's the thing that you paid for that was a waste that you realize later, wow, I didn't realize I was paying for that and didn't need it. Or just a thing that you suddenly realized, well, that was stupid. For me, I'll explain this a little more later. If you listen to the show a little bit, you know that I pride myself on being a really good budgeter. Like, I budget by the month, and I have a budget for the year, and it's all color-coded, and it's all... Whoa. Like, I think that's fun. I just think it's fun.
Good for you.
And it's, I mean, people, like, make fun of me, but I have no debt. And so I think my system works pretty well.
Well, you have no debt.
Zero debt. There's not even a balance on my credit card right now because I just use the same credit
what
card all the time and then
feeling
pay
like
it every 10 days. It means that my car is 10 years old and
sure.
I've never had a car payment.
But you don't care about that stuff, right? I mean, you're not a car person. It just needs to get from point A to point B. Yeah.
My money goes into travel. I mean, more than anything else, travel and restaurants. But I noticed... I don't even know why I noticed it, but it was yesterday morning before the show. I was just glancing at my credit card statement just to check often. I'm like, what is that charge? What is that on there for? And then I realized I have been paying for something for a year and a half that I was not using and didn't need. That is the definition of stupid tax. And I have been paying it. And I'm ashamed, and we'll talk. I need people to make me feel better, I think, is what we're talking about. So we'll get to that coming up here a little bit later. That's up on Facebook if you want to put your comments on there. But I had a couple questions about the regulation of Hyperloop, and that's what we've been talking about because the new feasibility study is out that you have tweeted out, and there was a big meeting yesterday with Black and Veatch. You have a thing that that we will have the first. And mm-hmm. so who regulates it? Who writes the regulations? How do you know what the regulations should even be when you don't have anything to go off of? I just asked you 9 questions at once. Have at it.
Yeah, and by the way, we got to keep in mind, this has never been done before. We hope that we're going to be the first in North America because there could be a huge benefit from that because, number one, we could set the rules. Not necessarily on just regulation, but our lawmakers know transportation logistics. Many of them come from the industry. They're certainly aware of the impact it's had on the state and this part of the country. Now, how this is regulated is a big unknown. And part of what our recommendations back to the Speaker of the House next fall with this blue ribbon panel is going to be potential ways that we should move forward with regulation. This will be regulated. There will be oversight. And it will have to be considered in a number of different agencies. So if it's just these 2 cities, or 3 cities, I should say, Missouri, is that going to be regulated by the state? And if so, would that likely go under the Missouri Department of Transportation, or MoDOT? And if it's if it looks similar to a train, is it going to be regulated like trains are regulated? If you're going to be inside of a fuselage like you are on a plane, is that going to be something the FAA looks at? So there's all these different options. To be honest, we don't know yet. But what we're lucky to have, and I don't care where you stand politically, but we do have some pretty good leaders in Missouri who are continuing to look at this now, knowing full well they're going to be termed out by the time this ever becomes a reality. So that takes leadership, and I got to give them credit on that. It's a huge thing to say that we've got people who are elected who are looking at this because they want to help set the framework for a system they plan to use in their life. So they're at the same table as this.
So when we talk about regulation, I assume the bulk of that deals with safety, because the only thing I have to compare to is like Amtrak, you know?
Yeah.
And that's not what this is, but you look at a transportation system that covers a lot of ground. And so I think safety, which to me says things like speed and inspections and who inspects it.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're going to have to figure out, because it's going to have to be an outside agency that's going to need to be meticulous on this. So, and we're going to create some new skills in this, right? So again, we are going to probably create some new jobs, new companies to be the oversight agencies for these things. It may not just be the state. So again, like the federal government's looking at this too. So members of Congress, and we're lucky to have a congressman, Congressman Graves, who's a ranking member of the Transportation Committee. So, I mean, really right now we're in the best place possible to help lead on what are the potential outcomes for regulation. And it's not regulation to save money or, you know, get this done first. It's to make sure it's the most safe system possible.
And tell us again why Kansas City to St. Louis is the spot that they want to do this first.
I-70. You have 3 different markets there that connected on one highway
flat.
In one state.
But you said the flat doesn't matter.
It is relatively flat.
Okay.
Unlike in other places in America, it's relatively flat. So, and it's relatively straight. I know it's not a completely straight shot, but it's relatively straight. And those are all important factors when looking at what project could potentially be first.
Interesting. So what's next then? The report came out. What are we? I know next week the CEO is going to be in town answering questions. Keeping in mind, I mean, you said 7 to 10 years to build it from the time that construction starts. What? So, I mean, maybe before we retire, but what's next then?
Yeah, the next steps are not going to be as sexy, right? So it's going to be looking at regulatory frameworks. Putting together a public-private partnership is potentially the best way to fund something like this. But guess what, folks? Other people are doing this. The first track is likely to be in India. So you better believe we are watching very closely the Pune to Mumbai track. We're looking very closely at how they're structuring that, regulating that, funding it, creating regulation for it, all of it. And the next one's probably going to be in the Middle East, and then it'll be here. Okay. So we are creating the first wheel in North America, but we're not inventing the wheel.
Which is a little comforting to know that someone, I mean, it's nice to be first, but it's also nice to let someone else make the mistakes first.
Yeah, and you got to think, like in India, the government and the leaders there are saying, okay, we're not going to build 12-lane highways.
Right. You know,
we're going to learn from the mistakes of other parts in the world. We're going to build a system that is way more efficient, that can move a lot of people. And they have a lot of people. Those are 2 very big population centers. And they're looking at this as a solution to a big problem for them.
All right. If you have more questions on Hyperloop, feel free to text in. If we've if some of you are now asking questions that we asked earlier in the show, we will podcast all of this later, so you can always go back and listen. And if we get any new ones, we'll spend a few minutes on this before the end of the show. But thank you for filling us in.
Anytime. I love talking about this.
It's fascinating. Anytime you have a new thing, you have questions that you didn't even realize you would have. You know, it didn't even occur to me. Like, if the power goes out, what happens? Because it's electric, you know, and I'm sure that they are thinking of all of these things. So we'll come back to this a little bit later.
I mean, I love it. I appreciate everyone's comments on this, because the more people I talk to about this, the more I learn, honestly, because my feeble little mind can only think so much about this, and I get stuck in the things I'm interested in. But it's been so great as these community conversations have come around. And again, come next Wednesday afternoon, 3:35 at WeWork, because we'll have the CEO of Virgin Hyperloop one there, and we'll have some time to answer some questions. So you will hear what other people are thinking too.
I'll mention this one because I feel like I know the answer, and then this is the last question we'll do. Why not Kansas City to Denver, even though it's farther, a more desirable city? I assume because two cities in the same state makes it a heck of a lot easier.
Yeah, and by the way, that's absolutely our goal, is to make this a national network. I want to go ski, and I want to get there in a couple minutes and come back and sleep in my bed.
Yeah.
And again, the distance, you got to keep in mind, when you're traveling at that of a high rate of speed, distance is not a significant increase in time. So whether it's only 30 minutes to St. Louis, it may only be 40 minutes to Denver, because you're traveling at 800 miles an hour.
Got it. All right, Ryan Weber, KC Tech Council, we appreciate all the information.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.